Lilith's hand, warm and strong, found Aelin's again. And when she looked up at him, there were tears on his face. Not at the dead Volg Queen before them, or even at what Aelin had done. No. Her prince, her husband, her mate gazed to the south, to the battlefield. Even as their power melded and she burned Maeve into ash and memory, Rowan stared toward the battlefield, where line after line after line of Volg soldiers fell to their knees mid-fight with the Fey and Wolves and Dargon cavalry. Where the Rooks flapped in amazement as Ilkin tumbled from the skies like they had been struck dead. Far out, several shrill screams rent the air, then fell silent. An entire army, mid-battle, mid-blow, collapsing. It rippled outward, that collapsing, the stillness, until all of Morath's host lay unmoving, until the Iron Teeth fighting above realized what was happening and veered southward, fleeing from the Rookin and witches who now gave chase. Until the dark shadow surrounding that fallen army drifted away on the wind, too. Aelin knew for certain then where Erewhon had gone, who had brought him down at last. So Aelin wrenched her sword free of the pile of ashes that had been Maeve. She lifted it high to the night sky, to the stars, and let her cry of victory fill the world. Let the name she shouted ring out, the soldiers on the field, in the city, taking up the call until all of Orinth was singing with it. Until it reached the shining stars of the Lord of the North, gleaming above them, no longer needed to guide her way home. Irene. 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 Chapter 116. Kaol awoke to warm, delicate hands stroking over his brow, his jaw. He knew that touch, would know it if he were blind. One moment he'd been fighting his way down the battlements, the next, oblivion. As if whatever surge of power had gone through Irene had not only weakened his spine, but his consciousness.
I don't know whether to start yelling or crying, he said,
groaning as he opened his eyes and found Irene kneeling before him. A heartbeat had him assessing their surroundings, some sort of stairwell, where he'd been sprawled over the lowest steps near a landing. An archway open to the frigid night revealed a starry, clear sky beyond. No wyverns in it. And cheering. Victorious, wild cheering. Not one bone drum. Not one snarl or roar. And Irene, still stroking his face, was smiling at him, tears in her eyes. Feel free to yell all you like, she said, some of those tears slipping free. But Kaol just gaped at her, as it hit him what exactly had happened, why that surge of power had happened, what this remarkable woman before him had done. For they were calling her name. The army. The people of Orinth were calling her name. He was glad he was sitting down. Even if it did not surprise him one bit that Irene had done the impossible. Kaol slid his arms around her waist and buried his face in her neck.
It's over, then,
he said against her skin, unable to stop the shaking that took over, the mix of relief and joy and lingering phantom terror. Irene just ran her hands through his hair, down his back, and he felt her smile. It's over. Yet the woman he held, the child growing within her. Erewhon might have been over, his threat and army with it, and Maeve with it too. But life, Kaol realized, life was just beginning. Nezrin didn't believe it. The enemy had just collapsed, even the Karen Kui hybrids. It was as unlikely as the Fey and Wolves who had simply appeared through holes in the world. a missing army, who had wasted no time launching themselves at Morath, as if they knew precisely where and how to strike, as if they had been summoned from the ancient myths of the North. Nezrin alit on the blood-soaked city walls, watching the Rukin and allied witches chase the Iron Teeth toward the horizon. She would have been with them, were it not for the claw marks surrounding Salki's eye. For the blood. She barely had the breath to scream for a healer as she dismounted. Barely the breath to unsaddle the Rook, murmuring to the bird as she did. So much blood. The gouging lines from the Ilken sentry deep. No sheen of poison, but... Are you hurt? Sartak. The prince's eyes were wide, his face bloodied, as he scanned her from head to toe. Behind him, Kadara panted on the battlements, her feathers as bloody as her rider. Sartak gripped her shoulders. Are you hurt? She'd never seen such panic in his face. Nezrin only pointed to the now still enemy, unable to find the words. But others did. One word, one name, over and over. Irene. Healers raced up the battlements, aiming for both rooks, and Nezrin allowed herself to slide her arms around Sartak's waist, to press her face against his armored chest. Nezrin. Her name was a question and a command, but Nezrin only held him tightly. So close. They had come so, so close to utter defeat. Irene, 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 the soldiers and people of the city shouted. Sartak ran a hand down her matted hair. You know what victory means, don't you? Nezrin lifted her head, brows narrowing. Behind them, Salki patiently stood while the healer's magic soothed over his eye. A good night's rest, I hope, she said. Sartak laughed and pressed a kiss to her temple. It means, he said against her skin, that we are going home. That you are coming home with me. And even with the battle freshly ended, even with the dead and wounded around them, Nezrin smiled. Home. Yes. She would go home with him to the southern continent, and to all that waited there. Aelin, Rowan, Lorcan, and Fenris lingered on the plain outside the city gates until they were certain the fallen army was not going to rise, until the Coggins' troops went between the enemy soldiers, nudging and prodding, and received no answer. But they did not behead, did not sever and finish the job. Not for those with the black rings or black collars, those whom the healers might yet save. Tomorrow. That would come tomorrow. The moon had reached its peak when they wordlessly decided that they had seen enough to determine Erewhon's army would never rise again. When the Rooks, Crokins, and Rebel Iron Teeth had vanished, chasing the last of the aerial legion into the night. Then, Aelin turned toward the southern gate to Orinth. As if in answer, it groaned open to meet her. Two arms flung wide. Aelin looked to Rowan, their crowns aflame still burning, undimmed. Took his hand. Heart thundering through every bone in her body, Aelin took a step toward the gate. Toward Orinth, toward home. Lorcan and Fenris fell into step behind them. The latter's wounds still leaked down his face, but he had refused Aelin and Rowan's offers to heal him, had said he wanted a reminder. They hadn't dared to ask of what. Not yet. Aelin lifted her chin high, shoulders squaring as they neared the archway. Soldiers already lined either side. Not the Coggins soldiers, but men and women in Terrasen armor, and civilians amongst them too, awe and joy in their faces. Aelin looked at the threshold of the gate, at the ancient familiar stones now caked in blood and gore. She sent a whisper of flame skittering over them, the last dregs of her power. When the fire vanished, The stones were again clean. New. As this city would be made anew. Brought to greater heights, greater splendors. A beacon of learning and light once more. Rowan's fingers tightened around hers. But she did not look at him as they crossed the threshold, passing through the gate. No. Aelin only looked at her people, smiling broadly and freely, as she entered Orinth, and they began to cheer, welcoming her home at long last. Chapter 117. Adian had fought until the enemy soldier before him had slumped to his knees as if dead. But the man, a black ring on his finger, was not dead at all. Only the demon inside him. And when soldiers of countless nations began to cheer, when word spread that a Torre Chesme healer had defeated Erewhon, Adian simply turned from the battlements. He found him by scent alone. Even in death, the scent lingered. A path that Adian followed through the wrecked streets and throngs of celebrating, weeping people. A lone candle had been lit in the empty barracks room, where they'd set his body atop a work table. It was there that Adian knelt before his father. How long he stayed there, head bowed, he didn't know. But the candle had nearly burned down to its base when the door creaked open, and a familiar scent flitted in. She said nothing as she approached on silent feet. Nothing as she shifted and knelt beside him. Lysandra only leaned into him, until Adian put his arm around her, tucking her in tight. Together, they knelt there, and he knew her grief was as real as his. Knew her grief was for Gavriel, but also for his own loss. The years he and his father would not have. The years he'd realized he wanted to have, the stories he wished to hear, the male he wished to know, and never would. Had Gavriel known that? Or had he fallen believing his son wished nothing to do with him? He couldn't endure it, that potential truth. Its weight would be unbearable. When the candle sputtered out, Lysandra rose and took him with her. A grand burial, Adian silently promised, with every honor, every scrap of stately regalia that could be found in the aftermath of this battle. He'd bury his father in the royal graveyard, amongst the heroes of Terrasen, where he himself would be buried one day. Beside him, it was the least he could do, to make sure his father knew in the afterworld. They stepped into the street, and Lysandra paused to wipe away his tears, to kiss his cheeks, then his mouth. Loving, gentle touches. Adian slid his arms around her, and held her tightly under the stars and moonlight. How long they stood in the street? He didn't know. But then a throat cleared nearby, and they peeled apart to turn toward its source. A young man, no older than 30, stood there, staring at Lysandra. Not a messenger or a soldier, though he wore the heavy clothes of the Rukin. There was a self-possessed purpose to him. A quiet sort of strength in his tall frame as he swallowed. Are you Lady Lysandra? Lysandra angled her head. I am. The man took a step, and Adian suppressed the urge to push her behind him, to draw his sword on the man whose gray eyes widened and shone with tears, who smiled at her, broad and joyous.
My name is Falcon Anar,
he said, putting a hand on his chest. Lysandra's face remained the portrait of wary confusion. Falcon's smile didn't waver.
I have been looking for you for a very, very long time.
And then it came out, Falcon's tears flowing as he told her. Her uncle. He was her uncle. Her father had been much older than him, but ever since Falcon had learned of her existence, he'd been searching for her. 10 years he'd hunted for his dead brother's abandoned child, visiting Rifthold whenever he could. never realizing that she might have his gifts, too, might not wear any of his brother's features. But Nezrin Falik had found him, or they'd found each other. And then they had figured it out, a bit of chance in this wide world. His fortune as a merchant was hers to inherit, if she would like.
Whatever you wish, Falcon said. You shall never want for anything again.
Lysandra was crying, and it was pure joy on her face as she flung her arms around Falcon and embraced him tightly. Adian watched, silent and ripped open, yet happy for her. He would always be happy for her, for any ray of light she found. Lysandra pulled away from Falcon, though, still smiling bright, more lovely than the night sky above. She laced her fingers with Adian's and squeezed tight as she answered her uncle at last.
I already have everything I need.
Hours later, still sitting on the balcony where Erewhon had been blasted away into nothing, Dorian didn't quite believe it. He kept staring at that spot, the dark stain on the stones, Damaris jutting up from it. The only trace left. His father's name. His own name. The weight of it settled into him, not a wholly unpleasant thing. Dorian flexed his bloodied fingers. His magic lay in scraps, the tang of blood lingering on his tongue, an approaching burnout. He'd never had one before. He supposed he'd better become accustomed to them. On shaking legs, Dorian yanked Damaris from the stones. The blade had turned black as onyx. A swipe of his fingers down the fuller revealed it was a stain that would not be cleansed. He needed to get off this tower. Find Kaol. Find the others. Start helping the injured and the unconscious soldiers on the plain. The ones who had not been possessed had already fled, pursued by the strange fae who had appeared, the giant wolves and their riders amongst them. He should go. Should leave this place. And yet he stared at the dark stain, all that remained. 10 years of suffering and torment and fear, and the stain was all that remained. He turned the sword in his hand, its weight heavier than it had been. The sword of truth. What had the truth been in the end? What was the truth even now? Erewhon had done this, slaughtered and enslaved so many, so he might see his brothers again. He wanted to conquer their world, punish it. But he'd wanted to be reunited with them. Millennia apart. And Erewhon had not forgotten his brothers, longed for them. Would he have done the same for Kaol? For Hollin? Would he have destroyed a world to find them again? Damaris's black blade didn't reflect the light. It didn't gleam at all. Dorian still tightened his hand around the golden hilt and said,
I am human.
It warmed in his hand. He peered at the blade, Gavin's blade, a relic from a time when Otterlin had been a land of peace and plenty, and it would be that way once more.
I am human,
he repeated, to the stars now visible above the city. The sword didn't answer again, as if it knew he no longer needed it. Wings boomed, and then Abraxos was landing on the balcony, a white-haired rider atop him. Dorian stood, blinking, as Manon Blackbeak dismounted. She scanned him, then the dark stain on the balcony stones. Her golden eyes lifted to his, weary, heavy, yet glowing. Hello, princeling, she breathed. A smile bloomed on his mouth.
Hello, witchling.
He scanned the skies beyond her for the 13, for Asterin Blackbeak, undoubtedly roaring her victory to the stars. Manon said quietly, You will not find them. In this sky. Or any other. His heart strained as he understood. As the loss of those 12 fierce, brilliant lives carved another hole within him. One he would not forget. One he would honor. Silently, He crossed the balcony. Manon did not back away as he slid his arms around her.
I am sorry,
he said into her hair. Tentatively, slowly, her hands drifted across his back, then settled, embracing him.
I miss them,
she whispered, shuddering. Dorian only held her tighter and let Manon lean on him for as long as she needed, Abraxo staring toward that blasted bit of earth on the plain, toward the mate who would never return, while the city below celebrated. Aelin strode with Rowan up the steep streets of Orinth. Her people lined those streets, candles in their hands. A river of light, a fire that pointed the way home, straight to the castle gates. To where Lord Darrow stood, Evangeline at his side, the girl beaming with joy. Darrow's face was stone cold, hard as the staghorns beyond the city as he remained blocking the way. Rowan let out a growl, the sound echoed by Fenris, a step behind them. Yet Aelin let go of her mate's hand, their crowns aflame winking out as she crossed the last few feet to the castle archway. To Darrow. Silence fell down the illuminated golden street. He'd deny her entry. Here, before the world, he would throw her out. A final shaming slap. But Evangeline tugged on Darrow's sleeve, as if in reminder. It seemed to spur the old man into speech.
My young ward and I were told that when you went to face Erewhon and Maeve, your magic was heavily depleted.
It was, and shall remain so forever. Darrow shook his head.
Why?
Not about her magic being whittled to nothing, but why she had gone to face them with little more than embers in her veins. Terrasen is my home, Aelin said. It was the only answer in her heart. Darrow smiled, just a bit.
So it is.
He bowed his head, then his body.
Welcome,
he said, then added as he rose,
Your Majesty.
But Aelin looked to Evangeline, the girl still beaming.
Win me back my kingdom, Evangeline.
Her order to the girl, all those months ago. And she didn't know how Evangeline had done it, how she had changed this old lord before them. Yet there was Darrow, gesturing to the gates, to the castle behind him. Evangeline winked at Aelin, as if in confirmation. Aelin just laughed, taking the girl by the hand, and led that promise of Terrasen's bright future into the castle. Every ancient scarred hall brought her back, snatched her breath away, and set her tears running. At the memory, how they'd been, at how they now appeared sad and worn, and what they would become once more. Darrow led them toward the dining hall to find whatever food and refreshment might be available in the dead of night after such a battle. Yet Aelin took one look at who waited in the faded grandeur of the great hall and forgot about her hunger and thirst. The entire hall grew silent as she hurtled for Adian and flung herself onto him so hard they rocked back a step. Home at last. Home together. She had the vague sense of Lysandra joining Rowan and the others behind her, but didn't turn. Not as her own joyous laugh died upon seeing Adian's haggard, weary face. The sorrow in it. She laid a hand on his cheek.
I'm sorry.
Adian closed his eyes, leaning into her touch, mouth wobbling. She didn't remark on the shield across his back, her father's shield. She had never realized he carried it. Instead, she asked softly,
Where is he?
Wordlessly, Adian led her from the dining hall, down the winding passageways of the castle, their castle, to a small candle-lit room. Gavriel had been laid on a table, a wool blanket obscuring the body she knew was shredded beneath, only his handsome face visible, still noble and kind in death. Adian lingered by the doorway as Aelin walked up to the warrior. She knew Rowan and the others stood by him, her mate with a hand on Adian's shoulder. Knew Fenris and Lorkin bowed their heads. She stopped before the table where Gavriel had been laid.
I wished to wait to offer you the blood oath until after your son had taken it, she said,
her quiet voice echoing off the stones.
But I offer it to you now, Gavriel, with honor and gratitude. I offer you the blood oath.
Her tears plopped onto the blanket covering him, and she wiped one away before drawing her dagger from the sheath at her side. She pulled his arm from beneath the covering. A flick of the blade had her slicing his palm open. No blood flowed beyond a slight swelling, yet she waited until a drop slid to the stones. Then she opened up her own arm, dipped her fingers into the blood, and let three drops fall into his mouth.
Let the world know,
Aelin said, voice breaking,
that you are a male of honor, that you stood by your son and this kingdom and helped to save it.
She kissed the cold brow.
You are blood sworn to me, and you shall be buried here as such.
She pulled away, stroking his cheek once.
Thank you.
It was all there was left to say. When she turned away, it was not Adian alone who had tears streaking down his face. She left them there. The cadre, the brotherhood, who now wished to say farewell in their own way. Fenris, his bloodied face still untended, sank to a knee beside the table. A heartbeat later, Lorkin did the same. She'd reached the door when Rowan knelt as well, and began to sing the ancient words, the words of mourning, as old and sacred as Terrasen itself. The same prayers she'd once sung and chanted while he'd tattooed her. Rowan's clear, deep voice filling the room. Aelin looped her arm through Adian's and let him lean on her as they walked back to the great hall. Darrow called me your majesty, she said after a minute. Adian slid his red-rimmed eyes to her, but a spark lit them, just a bit.
Should we be worried?
Aelin's mouth curved. I thought the same damn thing. So many witches. There were so many witches, Iron Teeth and Kraken, in the halls of the castle. Elide scanned their faces as she worked with the healers in the great hall. A dark lord and dark queen defeated, yet the wounded remained. And since she had strength left in her, she would help in whatever way she could. But when a white-haired witch limped into the hall, an injured Kraken slung between her and another witch Elide did not recognize. Elide was halfway across the space, across the hall where she had spent so many happy childhood days, by the time she realized she'd moved. Manon paused at the sight of her, gave the wounded Kraken over to her sister in arms, but made no move to approach. Elide saw the sorrow on her face before she reached her, the dullness and pain in the golden eyes. She went still.
Who?
Manon's throat bobbed.
All
of the 13. All those fierce, brilliant witches, gone. Elide put a hand to her heart, as if it could stop it from cracking. But Manon closed the distance between them. And even with that grief in her battered, bloodied face, she put a hand on Elide's shoulder. In comfort. As if the witch had learned how to do such things. Elide's vision stung and blurred, and Manon wiped away the tear that escaped.
Live, Elide,
was all the witch said to her, before striding out of the hall once more.
Live.
Manon vanished into the teeming hallway, braid swaying. And Elide wondered if the command had been meant for her at all. Hours later, Elide found Lorkin standing vigil by Gavriel's body. When she'd heard, she had wept for the male who had shown her such kindness. And from the way Lorkin knelt before Gavriel, she knew he had just finished doing the same. Sensing her in the doorway, Lorkin rose to his feet an aching, slow movement of the truly exhausted. There was indeed sorrow on his face, grief and regret. She held open her arms, and Lorkin's breath heaved out of him as he pulled her against him.
I hear, he said onto her hair, that you're to thank for Erewhon's destruction.
Elide withdrew from his embrace, leading him from that room of sadness and candlelight.
Irene is, she said,
walking until she found a quiet spot near a bank of windows overlooking the celebrating city.
I just came up with the idea.
Without the idea, we'd be filling the bellies of Erewhon's beasts.
Elide rolled her eyes, despite all that had happened, all that lay before them.
It was a group effort, then.
She bit her lip.
Peranth, have you heard anything from Peranth?
A Rook rider arrived a few hours ago. It is the same there as it is here. With Erewhon's demise, the soldiers holding the city either collapsed or fled. Its people have reclaimed control, but those who were possessed will need healers. A group of them will be flown over tomorrow to begin.
Relief threatened to buckle her knees.
Thank Aneth for that. Or Silba, I suppose.
They're both gone. Thank yourself.
Elide waved him off. But Lorkin kissed her. When he pulled away, Elide breathed.
What was that for?
Ask me to stay,
was all he said. Her heart began racing.
Stay,
she whispered. Light, such beautiful light filled his dark eyes.
Ask me to come to Peranth with you.
Her voice broke, but she managed to say,
come to Peranth with me.
Lorkin nodded, as if in answer, and his smile was the most beautiful thing she had ever seen.
Ask me to marry you.
Elide began crying, even as she laughed.
Will you marry me, Lorkin Salvatore?
He swept her up into his arms, raining kisses over her face, as if some final chained part of him had been freed.
I'll think about it.
Elide laughed, smacking his shoulder, and then laughed again, louder. Lorkin set her down.
What?
Elide's mouth bobbed as she tried to stop her laughing.
It's just, I'm Lady of Peranth. If you marry me, you will take my family name.
He blinked. Elide laughed again.
Lord Lorkin Locken?
It sounded just as ridiculous coming out. Lorkin blinked at her, then howled. She'd never heard such a joyous sound. He swept her up in his arms again, spinning her.
I'll use it with pride every damned day for the rest of my life,
he said into her hair. And when he set her down, his smile had vanished, replaced by an infinite tenderness as he brushed back her hair, hooking it over an ear.
I will marry you, Elide Locken, and proudly call myself Lord Lorkin Locken, even when the whole kingdom laughs to hear it.
He kissed her, gently and lovingly.
And when we are wed,
he whispered,
I will bind my life to yours, so we will never know a day apart. Never be alone. Ever again.
Elide covered her face with her hands and sobbed. At the heart he offered, at the immortality he was willing to part with for her. For them. But Lorkin clasped her wrists, gently prying her hands from her face. His smile was tentative.
If you would like that,
he said. Elide slid her arms around his neck, feeling his thundering heartbeat raging against hers, letting his warmth sink into her bones.
I would like that more than anything,
she whispered back. Chapter 118. Irene slumped onto the three-legged stool amid the chaos of the great hall. The story was familiar, though the setting slightly altered. Another mighty chamber turned into a temporary sickbay. Dawn was not far off, yet she and the other healers kept working. Those bleeding out wouldn't be able to survive without them. Human and fey and witch and wolf. Irene had never seen such an assortment of people in one place. Elide had come in at some point, glowing despite the injured around them. Irene supposed they all wore that same smile, though her own had faltered in the past hour as exhaustion settled in. She'd been forced to rest after dealing with Erewhon, and had waited until her well of power had refilled only just enough to begin working again. She couldn't sit still. Not when she saw the thing that lay beneath Erewhon's skin every time she closed her eyes. Forever gone, yes, but she wondered when she'd forget him. The dark, oily feel of him. Hours ago, she hadn't been able to tell if the retching that ensued was from the memory of him or the babe in her womb.
You should find that husband of yours and go to bed, Hafiza said, hobbling over and frowning. When was the last time you slept?
Irene lifted her head, heavier than it had been minutes ago. The last time you did, I'd wager. 2 days ago. Hafiza clicked her tongue.
Slaying a dark lord, healing the wounded. It's a wonder you're not unconscious right now, Irene.
Irene was about to be, but the disapproval in Hafiza's voice steeled her spine.
I can work.
I'm ordering you to find that dashing husband of yours and go to sleep. On behalf of the child in your womb.
Ugh, when the healer on high put it like that. Irene groaned as she stood.
You're merciless. Hafiza just patted her shoulder. Good healers know when to rest. Exhaustion makes for sloppy decisions, and sloppy decisions
cost lives, Irene finished. She lifted her eyes toward the vaulted ceiling high, high above. You never stop teaching, do you?
Hafiza's mouth cracked into a grin. This is life, Irene. We never stop learning, even at my age.
Irene had long suspected that love of learning was what had kept the healer on high young at heart all these years. She just smiled back at her mentor. But Hafiza's eyes softened, grew contemplative.
We will remain for as long as we are needed, until the Coggins soldiers can be transported home. We'll leave some behind to tend for any remaining wounded. But in a few weeks, we will go.
Irene's throat tightened. I know.
And you, Hafiza went on, taking her hand, will not return with us.
Her eyes burned, but Irene whispered, no, I won't. Hafiza squeezed Irene's fingers, her hand warm, strong as steel.
I shall have to find myself a new heir apparent, then.
I'm sorry, she whispered.
Whatever for, Hafiza chuckled. You have found love and happiness, Irene.
There is nothing more that I could ever wish for you. Irene wiped away the tear that slipped out. I don't want you to think I wasted your time.
Hafiza crowed with laughter. Wasted my time. Irene Towers. Irene Westfall.
The ancient woman cupped Irene's face with her strong, ancient hands.
You have saved us all.
Irene closed her eyes as Hafiza pressed a kiss to her brow. A blessing and a farewell.
You will stay in these lands,
Hafiza said, her smile unwavering.
But even with the ocean dividing us, we will remain linked here.
She touched her chest, right over her heart.
And no matter the years, you will forever have a place at the Torre. Always.
Irene put a shaking hand over her own heart and nodded. Hafiza squeezed her shoulder and made to walk back to her patients. But Irene said, "What if..." Hafiza turned, brows rising.
"Yes?"
Irene swallowed. "What if, once I have settled in Otterlin and had this babe, when the time is right, what if I established my own Torre here?"
Hafiza cocked her head, as if listening to the cadence of the statement while it echoed into her heart. "A Torre Chesme in the north."
Irene went on, "In Otterlin, in Rifthold. A new Torre to replenish what Erewhon destroyed. To teach the children who might not realize they have the gift. And those who will be born with it.
Because many of the Fae streaming in from the battlefield were descendants of the healers who had gifted the Torre women with their powers long ago. Perhaps they would wish to help again."
Hafiza smiled anew.
"I like that idea very much, Irene Westfall."
With that, the healer on high walked back into the fray of healing and pain. But Irene remained standing there, a hand drifting to the slight swelling in her belly. And she smiled, broad and unfalteringly, at the future that opened before her, bright as the oncoming dawn. Sunrise was near, yet Manon could not sleep. Had not bothered to find a place to rest, not while the Crokins and Iron Teeth remained injured. And she had not yet finished her count of how many had survived the battle. The war. There was an empty space inside her, where 12 souls had once burned fiercely. Perhaps that was why she had not found her bed, not even when she knew Dorian had likely procured sleeping arrangements. Why she still lingered in the Aerie, Abraxos dozing beside her, and stared out at the silent battlefield. When the bodies were cleared, when the snows melted, when the spring came, would a blasted bit of earth linger on the plain before the city? Would it forever remain as such, a marker of where they fell?
"We have a final count," Bronwyn said behind her, and Manon found the Crokin and Glenys emerging from the tower stairwell, Petra at their heels.
Manon braced herself for it as she waved a hand in silent request. Bad, but not as bad as it could have been.
When Manon opened her eyes, the three of them only stared at her. Iron Teeth and Crokin standing together in peace, as allies.
"We'll collect the dead tomorrow," Manon said, her voice low, "and burn them at moonrise."
As both Crokins and Iron Teeth did. A full moon tomorrow, the mother's womb. A good moon to be burned, to be returned to the three-faced goddess and reborn within that womb.
"And after that?"
Petra asked.
"What then?"
Manon looked from Petra to Glenys and Bronwyn.
"What should you like to do?"
Glenys said softly.
"Go home."
Manon swallowed.
"You and the Crokins may leave whenever you..."
"To the wastes,"
Glenys said.
"Together."
Manon and Petra swapped a glance. Petra said,
"We cannot."
Bronwyn's lips curved upward.
"You can."
Manon blinked. And blinked again as Bronwyn extended a fist toward Manon and opened it. Inside lay a pale purple flower, small as Manon's thumbnail, beautiful and delicate.
"A bastion of Crokins just made it here, a bit late, but they heard the call and came, all the way from the wastes."
Manon stared and stared at that purple flower.
"They brought this with them, from the plain before the Witch City."
The barren, bloodied plain. The land that had yielded no flowers, no life beyond grass and moss and...
Manon's sight blurred. And Glenys took her hand, guiding it toward Bronwyn's before the witch tipped the flower into Manon's palm.
"Only together can it be undone,"
Glenys whispered.
"Be the bridge. Be the light."
a bridge between their two peoples, as Manon had become. A light, as the 13 had exploded with light, not darkness, in their final moments.
When iron melts,
Petra murmured, her blue eyes swimming with tears. The 13 had melted that tower, melted the iron teeth within it, and themselves.
When flowers spring from fields of blood,
Bronwyn went on. Manon's knees buckled as she stared out at that battlefield, where countless flowers had been laid atop the blood and ruins where the 13 had met their end. Glennis finished.
Let the land be witness.
The battlefield, where the rulers and citizens of so many kingdoms, so many nations, had come to pay tribute. To witness the sacrifice of the 13 and honor them.
Silence fell.
And Manon whispered, her voice shaking as she held that small, impossibly precious flower in her palm.
And return home.
Glennis bowed her head.
And so the curse is broken. And so we shall go home, together, as one people.
The curse was broken. Manon just stared at them, her breathing turning jagged. Then she roused Abraxos and was in the saddle within heartbeats. She did not offer them any explanation, any farewell, as they leaped into the thinning night. As she guided her wyvern to the bit of blasted earth on the battlefield. Right to its heart. And smiling through her tears, laughing in joy and sorrow, Manon laid that precious flower from the wastes upon the ground. In thanks and in love. So they would know, so Astarin would know, in the realm where she and her hunter and child walked hand in hand, that they had made it, that they were going home. Aelin had wanted to, but could not sleep, had ignored the offers to find her a room, a bed, in the chaos of the castle. Instead, she and Rowan had gone to the great hall to talk to the wounded, to offer what help they could for those who needed it most. The lost Fae of Terrasen, their giant wolves and adopted human clan with them, wanted to speak to her as much as the citizens of Orinth. How they had found the wolf tribe a decade ago, how they'd fallen in with them in the wilds of the mountains and hinterlands beyond, was a tale she'd soon learn. The world would learn. Their healers filled the great hall, joining the Torre women. All descended from those in the southern continent, and apparently trained by them too. Dozens of fresh healers, each bearing badly needed supplies. They fell seamlessly into work alongside those from the Torre, as if they had been doing so for centuries. And when the healers, both human and fae, had shooed them out, Aelin had wandered. Each hallway and floor, peering into the rooms so full of ghosts and memory. Rowan had walked at her side, a quiet, unfaltering presence. Level by level they went, rising ever higher. They were nearing the top of the North Tower when dawn broke. The morning was brutally cold, even more so atop the tower, standing high over the world. But the day would be clear, bright. So there it is, Aelin said, nodding toward the dark stain on the balcony stones. Where Erewhon met his end at the hands of a healer. She frowned. I hope it will wash off. Rowan snorted. And when she looked over her shoulder, the wind whipping her hair, she found him leaning against the stairwell door, his arms crossed. I mean it, she said. It'll be odious to have his mess there, and I plan to use this balcony to sun myself. He'll ruin it. Rowan chuckled and pushed off the door, going to the balcony rail.
If it doesn't wash off, we'll throw a rug over it.
Aelin laughed and joined him, leaning into his warmth as the sun gilded the battlefield, the river, the staghorns. Well, now you've seen every hall and room and stairwell. What do you make of your new home?
A little small,
but we'll manage. Aelin nudged him with an elbow and jerked her chin to the nearby western tower. Where the north tower was tall, the western tower was wide, grand. Near its upper levels, hanging over the perilous drop, a walled stone garden glowed in the sunlight. The king's garden. Queen's, she supposed. There had been nothing left but a tangle of thorns and snow, yet she still remembered it when it had belonged to Orlan. The roses and drooping latticework of wisteria, the fountains that had streamed right over the edge of the garden and into the open air below, the apple tree with blossoms like clumps of snow in the spring. I never realized how convenient it would be for Fleetfoot, she said of the secret private garden, reserved only for the royal family, sometimes just for the king or queen themselves, to not have to run down the tower stairs every time she needs to pee.
I'm sure your ancestors had canine bathroom habits in mind when they built it.
I would have, Aelin grumbled.
Oh, I believe it,
Rowan said, smirking.
But can you explain to me why we're not in there right now, sleeping?
In the garden? He flicked her nose.
In the suite beyond the garden. Our bedroom.
She'd led him quickly through the space, still preserved well enough, despite the disrepair of the rest of the castle. One of the Otterlanian cronies had undoubtedly used it. I want it cleaned of any trace of Otterlan before I stay in there, she admitted.
Ah.
She heaved a breath, sucking down the morning air. Aelin heard them before she saw them, scented them. And when they turned, they found Lorkin and Elid walking onto the tower balcony, Adian, Lysandra, and Fenris trailing. Wren Alsbrook, tentative and wary-eyed, emerged behind them. How they'd known where to find them, why they'd come, Aelin had no idea. Fenris's wounds had closed at least, though twin red scars slashed from his brow to his jaw. He didn't seem to notice or care. She also didn't fail to note the hand Lorkin kept on Elide's back, the glow on the lady's face. Aelin could guess well enough what that glow was from. Even Lorkin's dark eyes were bright. It didn't stop Aelin from catching Lorkin's stare and giving him a warning look that conveyed everything she didn't bother to say. If he broke the Lady of Perranth's heart, she'd flambé him and would invite Manon Blackbeak to roast some dinner over his burning corpse. Lorkin rolled his eyes, and Aelin deemed that acceptance enough as she asked them all, did anyone bother to sleep? Only Fenris lifted his hand. Adian frowned at the dark stain on the stones. We're putting a rug over it, Aelin told him. Lysandra laughed. Something tacky, I hope. I'm thinking pink and purple, embroidered with flowers, just what Erewhon would have loved. The fey males gaped at them, Wren blinking. Elide ducked her head as she chuckled. Rowan snorted again.
At least this court won't be boring.
Aelin put a hand on her chest, the portrait of outrage. You were honestly worried it would be?
Gods help us,
Lorkin grumbled. Elide elbowed him. Adian said to Wren, the young lord lingering by the archway, as if still debating making a quick exit.
Now's the chance to escape, you know, before you get sucked into this endless nonsense.
But Wren's dark eyes met Aelin's, scanned them. She'd heard about Murtaugh, knew now was not the time to mention it, the loss dimming his eyes. So she kept her face open, honest, warm. We could always use one more to partake in the nonsense, Aelin said, an invisible hand outstretched. Wren scanned her again.
You gave up everything, and still came back here, still fought.
All of it for Terrison, she said quietly.
Yes, I know,
Wren said, the scar down his face stark in the rising sun.
I understand that now.
He offered her a small smile.
I think I might need a bit of nonsense myself after this war.
Adian muttered,
You'll regret saying that.
But Aelin sketched a bow. Oh, he certainly will.
She smirked at the males assembled. I swear to you, I won't bore you to tears. A queen's oath. And what will not boring us entail, then? Adian asked.
Rebuilding, Elide said. Lots of rebuilding.
Trade negotiations, Lysandra said.
Training a new generation in magic, Aelin went on. Again, the males blinked at them.
Aelin angled her head, blinking right back at them.
Don't you lot have anything worthwhile to contribute? She clicked her tongue. Three of you are ancient as hell, you know.
I'd have expected better from cranky old bastards.
Their nostrils flared. Adian grinned, Ren wisely clamping his lips together to keep from doing the same. But Fenris said,
Four. Four of us are old as hell.
Aelin arched a brow. Fenris smirked, the movement stretching his scars.
Vaughn is still out there, and now free.
Rowan crossed his arms.
He'll never be caught again.
But Fenris's smirk turned knowing. He pointed to the camped Fey army on the plain, the wolves and humans amongst them.
I have a feeling someone down there might know where we could start.
He glanced at Aelin.
If you'd be amenable to another cranky old bastard joining this court.
Aelin shrugged. If you can convince him, I don't see why not. Rowan smiled at that and scanned the sky, as if he could see his missing friend soaring there.
Fenris winked. I promise he's not as miserable as Lorkin.
Elide smacked his arm, and Fenris darted away, hands up as he laughed.
You'll like him,
he promised Aelin.
All the ladies do,
he added with another wink to her, Lysandra, and Elide. Aelin laughed, the sound lighter, freer than any she had made, and faced the stirring kingdom.
We promised everyone a better world, she said after a moment, voice solemn.
So we'll start with that.
Starting small, Fenris said. I like it.
Aelin smirked at him. I rather liked the whole let's vote on the word keys thing we did. So we'll start with more of that, too.
Silence.
Then Lysandra asked,
Voting on what?
Aelin shrugged, sliding her hands into her pockets.
Things?
Adian arched a brow.
Like dinner?
Aelin rolled her eyes. Yes, on dinner. Dinner by committee. Elide coughed.
I think Aelin means on vital things. On how to run this kingdom.
Your queen, Lorkin said. What's there to vote on?
People should have a say in how they are governed. Policies that impact them. They should have a say in how this kingdom is rebuilt.
Aelin lifted her chin. I will be queen, and my children...
Her cheeks heated as she smiled toward Rowan.
Our children, she said a bit softly, will rule. One day.
But Terrasen should have a voice. Each territory, regardless of the lords who rule it, should have a voice. One chosen by its people. The cadre looked toward one another then. Rowan said,
There was a kingdom to the east. Long ago. They believed in such things.
Pride glowed in his eyes, brighter than the dawn.
It was a place of peace and learning. A beacon in a distant and violent part of the world. Once the Library of Orinth is rebuilt, we'll ask the scholars to find what they can about it.
We could reach out to the kingdom itself, Fenris said. See if some of their scholars or leaders might want to come here. To help us.
He shrugged.
I could do it. Travel there, if you wish.
She knew he meant it. To travel as their emissary. Perhaps to work through all he'd seen and endured. To make peace with the loss of his brother. With himself. She had a feeling the scars down his face would only fade when he willed it. but Aelin nodded. And while she'd gladly send Fenris wherever he wished. The library? She blurted. Rowan only smiled.
And the Royal Theater.
There was no theater. Not like in Rifthold. Rowan's smile grew.
There will be.
Aelin waved him off. Need I remind you that despite winning this war, we are no longer flush with gold? Rowan slid his arm around her shoulders.
Need I remind you that since you beheaded Maeve, I am a prince of Dorinel once again, with access to my assets and estates? And that with Maeve outed as an imposter, half of her wealth goes to you, and the other to the Whitethorns?
Aelin blinked at him slowly. The others grinned, even Lorcan. Rowan kissed her.
A new library and royal theater,
he murmured onto her mouth.
Consider them my mating presents to you, Fireheart.
Aelin pulled back, scanning his face, read the sincerity and conviction, and throwing her arms around him, laughing to the lightning sky, she burst into tears. It was to be a day for many meetings, Aelin decided, as she stood in a near-empty, dusty chamber and smiled at her allies, her friends. Ansel of Briarcliff, bruised and scratched, smiled back.
Your shifter was a good liar, she said.
I'm ashamed I didn't notice it myself. Prince Galen, equally battered, huffed a laugh.
In my defense, I've never met you.
He inclined his head to Aelin.
So hello, cousin.
Aelin, leaning against the half-decayed desk that served as the lone piece of furniture in the room, smirked at him. I saw you from a distance, once. Galen's Ash River eyes sparked.
I'm going to assume it was during your former profession, and thank you for not killing me.
Aelin chuckled, even as Rolf rolled his eyes.
Yes,